You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
This is Austin from Pure Sabacc, and you are listening to I Rebel, a Star Wars Destiny podcast.
Forgery of imperial documents, possession of stolen property, aggravated assault, resisting arrest.
On your own from the age of 15, reckless, aggressive, and undisciplined.
I rebel.
Welcome everyone to I Rebel. I'm your host, Jedi Geek Girl. Legacies is officially here now. Even though we have been playing with it for 3 weeks, we officially have it. And not only do we officially have it released, but we are officially playing with it in regional events. This weekend marks the first weekend of regional events that every regional event is playing Legacies. It is so exciting in this current format with this new card pool and seeing these results come in. At the time of this recording, I am glued to my computer watching the results of 4 regionals coming in.
I completely understand. This is really exciting stuff.
Have you been following the regionals results?
I've been following them kind of on the tertiary level just because my regional is kind of past and I wasn't able to make it out to it. But I love seeing the big up and coming things from each set.
The voice that you hear is my guest for this podcast from the only limited focus podcast out there, Pure Sabacc. Please welcome Austin.
The one and only. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. I have my coffee here in my little I Rebel coffee mug, and I have water, and I'm just trying to stay awake because it is late here, you know?
Yeah, it's only 7 o'clock over here, so I just got off work not too long ago, and I'm doing pretty well. Ready to talk some cards.
As am I. But before we talk about cards, I would like to take care of a little bit of business. The first thing I would like to do is say thank you to Colin. Colin is our new Patreon supporter. Thank you so much for supporting us. And you just got in at the nick of time to vote for our upcoming Listener's Choice episode. We have the results of that survey. You have voted, and our guest next week is going to be the one, the only, from Knights of Ren, Sugi, will be returning. Not only do we have a returning guest next week, but we are also running our current giveaway, which is 7 different I Rebel 8-bit cards. If you are interested in entering, please check out the details on our Facebook page on the left-hand side under giveaway. That concludes the business portion of the podcast. Before we dive into Destiny itself, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself outside of Star Wars Destiny?
Oh, absolutely. Outside of Star Wars Destiny, I am a veterinary technician. I work in a vet clinic and I take care of dogs all day. In my free time, other than gaming, or other than Star Wars Destiny, I should say, I enjoy general board games a lot. I like the big party games like Secret Hitler, Sushi Go, things like that, the code names, the real big interactive games. Hidden Roles games are some of my favorites, though. I enjoy X-Wing a lot, and I'm actually an avid cook, believe it or not. I like to cook a lot on my own. I really enjoy the series Binging with Babish on YouTube. I'm a huge fan of his, and I've been kind of slowly working my way through his cookbook, Eat What You Watch.
What would you say is your dish of choice? If you had to say, this is my dish, this is what I make good, and this is me, what would that dish be?
That would be lasagna with a Mediterranean salad. Lasagna is just one of my favorite things to make just because the layering is really, you have to be, it's not as much work as you think, but it's very fun to do. Plus, I get to make a red sauce, which I always have leftovers of, and I get to have pasta lunch all week. It's just my one thing. If Gordon Ramsay had me on Hell's Kitchen, that's what I'd make, my lasagna and a side salad.
I would have to say that my favorite dish of choice to make is actually a tater tot hot dish. And what I do is I add pepperoni and cheese to it. So it's not pretty healthy, but the flavor is very bold and it's a guilty pleasure of mine. Whenever I cook it, it's gone within a couple of days.
You can tell that's classic comfort food at its best.
It's something that I love making and I continually try to tweak it. Even though I think I have my recipe down and I don't want to change it any further, I am open to changing it.
That's the fun that I like with cooking is that it's more of an art than it is a science. So you don't have to stick to this exact recipe, this exact rigid thing. And you just kind of get to let loose and be like, that looks like about this much. Let's just try that.
As I previously mentioned, you are from the Pure Sabacc podcast. That podcast is not as well known as your Knights of Ren or your Jedi Trials or your Double Blink Gaming. For those who are hearing about it for the very first time through this podcast, can you tell us a little bit about your podcast
Pure Sepak is focused on limited formats in Destiny, on sealed and drafting specifically. I co-host it with Ben, my lovely co-host. He is the guy who had the initial idea for the show. We focus it on drafting because we saw that there's no one out there talking specifically about drafting. Drafting is one of our favorite parts of most card games we play. Me, mostly through Eternal, the lovely game Ben introduced me to. Him, through his background in Magic, as well as Eternal and other digital card games. Limited format in Destiny is some of my favorite stuff because it really does showcase pure skill in deck building, I think. Almost more so than constructed, because you don't have absolutely everything available to you. You have to work with what you've got. And yeah, sometimes you do get a bad draft, but through good, proper selective drafting, you can be on an even footing with the best out there. And it basically comes down to your selection versus the other person's selection. And then working with it from that point, how do you play that selection the best? I think that anyone who hasn't drafted yet, you really should take a notice. Right now, it looks like Rivals isn't going to be out till mid-February, so that really does kind of sting for people who missed the initial kind of secret release they did earlier this month. But I highly recommend anyone out there to talk to your store, order a set of Rivals kits, and try to get a draft going, because it is just some of the most fun you're going to have playing Destiny. I think our podcast is great because it focuses on the important bits of the game. We just got done with our first set review, which helps you prioritize some of those harder picks on, well, should I be taking this event versus that event, where should I be focusing my time and my colors, things like that, why it's important to try to run rainbow, things like that, that are going to be the important bit that take an average draft up to a really good competitive one. And I really hope that draft takes off as a competitive format.
Let's dive into that for a little bit. Have you played draft in other games?
Yes, I have. I've drafted in Eternal. That's mostly the place where I come from drafting. I haven't drafted an actual physical card game before, no. Not before Destiny.
How do you think it holds up in comparison to your previous drafting experience?
In my experience drafting card games, I think Destiny holds up reasonably well. It's much different than other games in that you have to have these characters that represent you on the board, and you have to outfit these characters with things, whereas in other games like Magic or Eternal or any other drafting game out there, what you have is the player basically is choosing from the best cards, and the player is essentially trying to assemble the best cards, whereas with Destiny, you're not only trying to assemble the best cards and the best list of events and things like that, you're also having to worry about assembling your character, assembling your supports, and making sure you have a cohesive plan ahead of time. And I think Destiny holds up reasonably well to other games in terms of how I've drafted before, at least in my experience with Eternal. And Ben has agreed multiple times that drafting in Destiny really does hold up a lot compared to drafting Magic. He does kind of miss some of the complexity of that, I'm sure, but I think he's fully embraced Destiny far more than he ever did Magic.
I agree. I love drafting in Destiny. It's one of my favorite ways to play. Whenever I play it, I find it fun. I find the variance of every drafting session to be unique and engaging. It's one of my favorite formats to play over arguably constructed. Even though it is beloved by many, myself included, there is some criticism about it because of the character setup and having the draft pack where basically everybody theoretically could run a Kessu, Anakin, Jawa. What would you say to people who would criticize the potential staleness of drafting in Destiny?
The potential staleness in drafting Destiny, when it's least in specific to those character picks, is, yeah, theoretically you could, but you're going to be limited to blue and yellow with that setup, so you're not going to have access to any red events or anything fun like that. You're not going to be able to run your Fang Fighter, some of the staples of your deck in Destiny. I think that if you want to be competitive especially, you should be looking for those extra characters that your opponent doesn't get access to that's going to change your deck and is going to make you more difficult to deal with, because Kessu, Anakin, Jawa, yeah, it's a fine deck. Kessu has a great ability. Anakin's awesome. You don't know which one to go for first. But when you compare that to a little bit more competitive draft, something that's like, for example, what I drafted in my most recent setup, where I managed to snag a Yoda and I managed to snag a Padme, leading me to a lovely mill deck that can shut down most things before they manage to get through my shields. I think if you're thinking about just running stale Destiny, I'm not going to say it's a failing on the player if they think draft is boring, absolutely. But I think that if you explored more of your options, I think you'd find a lot more than you'd expect.
I know that you and Ben talk about limited a lot, and I don't want to limit this conversation, so let's move into the standard format. The standard format is so deep and rich and engaging that the dex choices are not infinite, but it would take you a long time to play all of them.
Oh, absolutely.
When Legacies came out, I did not know what deck I was going to play. I was leaning towards Qui-Gon, Yoda, and I've been following these tournament results closely to figure out what I wanted to play because I have a regionals coming up and I wanted to make sure that the deck I'm playing, I'm comfortable with and does pretty decent. I don't have any expectations of winning, but I don't want to bomb the event either. Did you find that after the release of Legacies or after Legacies was spoiled, yourself having any difficulties coming up with a deck that you would like to play?
Absolutely not. I was immediately attracted to Zeb just because I've always been a fan of just outrageous damage decks, and I was really looking forward to that. I was also looking forward to running 5 battle droids, as I think most people are based on the price on the singles market right now, but I had no shortage of finding really creative constructed decks that I was absolutely looking forward to playing. I've had so much fun playing battle droids. They're just so annoying and silly, and just watching your opponent cut through hordes of them is just, I love some of the themes and the flavor you get out of Destiny, and a battle droid deck when you play it, it really does feel like you're running this dumb, mindless horde of robots that is just capable of overwhelming someone with just red dice spam.
And we are going to dive into some of those decks in this episode. We're not going to go card by card breakdown of what each card does. Those deck lists will be shared in our show notes if you want to check them out. We're actually going to speed through them for time. Let's dive in. And Austin, which one of the two would you like to share first that you brought?
Let's start with Ben's deck first. Why not?
For Ben's deck, we have a Rainbow Yoda deck. The Yoda Rainbow deck consists of a Elite Yoda, Jedha Partisan, and a Snap. This looks like a mill deck. Can you tell us what the goal of this deck is and what its contents are?
Ben is a huge fan of control and mill. If you listen to our show, that's his absolute favorite playstyle. And I asked him, Sarah, hey, share your favorite constructed deck you've been playing recently. This is what he came up with. He loves control and annoyance, and Snap Wexley kind of personifies that. Just, you don't have any resources on your side? Cool. Yeah, you don't have any shot of claiming around him. He brought Oda Gunga just because in case he does get the battlefield, it's a battlefield that's not benefiting his opponent at all because it only benefits him when he claims. He's focused mostly on upgrades that mill from the hand because between Jedha Partisan and Yoda, he can mill from the deck just fine. He's got Protective Mentor in there to use Yoda's shields to block for everyone else. He's got Scout and Maz's Goggles to pick cards from hands and pick that selective removal that's going to keep his dice off the table. He added Enforced Meditation to hurt their deck even more, and he's running nothing but control cards in his deck. He's running Vandalize to pull their upgrades, Sound the Alarm, Patience, Caution, things like that, and then Friends in Low Places, Strength Through Weakness, and Stronger You Have Become in order to mitigate his opponents and mill their deck further. He loves repeatable shields because they just slow down his opponents and keep them going. So he took Yoda's Hut and Medical Droid as well, just to keep his character in the game long enough.
This is a very interesting approach to Rainbow Hero mill. What would you say are some of his experiences with this deck compared to, say, the standard Riken Yoda Jedha mill?
It provides a little more annoyance than Riken does, and that's one thing he was playing with a lot is Riken, but he tended to go for Snap because you get 2 Yoda dice, so you get a lot more consistency out of his dice changing special to put Jedi Partisan on its special. You also have the special chaining through Scout, Maz's Goggles, and Force Meditation in full strength, as opposed to in a Riken mill deck where you're limited to 1 die Yoda. So those special chaining abilities, I think, count for more in Ben's mind than the ability to mill right off the deck with Riken every turn.
I would definitely say that this is definitely a more control-orientated deck list. There is no C-3PO, which is pretty much a staple in most hero mill decks. But this deck does run Vandalize, which is becoming one of my favorite cards.
It's so annoying, isn't it?
I don't know, because I play it. I try not to have it played against me.
That's so true. Yeah, Vandalize, when you run into it, it's so annoying. It's kind of taken the place of Rend for me just because, yeah, it costs 1 resource, whereas Rend doesn't. But 1 cost, remove nothing, also gives you the flexibility to pull a couple of your character dice and eliminate that ancient lightsaber before your opponent gets to heal with it. Or it lets you pull off Kylo's saber and let your shields count for more. There's a lot of cool stuff you can do with Vandalize, and I think it's just watch your opponent sink resources into it, pulling that big upgrade, and now it goes away.
I have to say that Vandalize has to be in the top 3 3. I would say of the best event cards in this set. Obviously, the other one being easy picking, but I think Vandalize is right up there because with Vandalize, you pay 1 and you do not have to spot a character to remove a number of your character's dice equal to the cost of a support or upgrade and play discard it. So you can play it to discard an Ancient Lightsaber, or you can use it to discard a Planetary Uprising. I really love this card, and I will be running it in pretty much all of my yellow decks, and I recommend people playing it in their decks too, because it is so flexible, and it is a card that, in my opinion, is a long time coming.
Yeah, something like this that removes upgrades, I think, has been something that's kind of been... I mean, we had Imperial Inspection, but as it was written, it was just such an oppressive card. I think the nerf to it was a long time coming in order to make sure that you couldn't just continuously discard things like that. It was very oppressive and no fun to play against. And I think a card like Vandalize, where it costs you a lot more, is a perfect way of upgrade removal, upgrade and support removal.
It does cost you a little bit more. I mean, you are playing 1 and you are removing your character dice, but it is more selective and it's targeting. And as long as you have the resource to play it, you can play it anytime. Even if you have no character dice, you can still remove 0. 0 is a number to discard a Sith Holocron or an Imperial Inspection, whatever you want to do. The only thing that it is difficult with is your higher number support or upgrade.
Yeah, good luck discarding an LR1K with this.
I think it would make my day if a 5-die villain played it.
Oh my god, yeah, 5-die villain plays Vandalize at the top table and discards the LR1K. Oh, that would be amazing. What a moment.
I know, right? Have you played against this deck?
I have not played against this deck with Ben. Ben and I have been on different opposite schedules this week, and I really wanted to, especially with the kind of deck we're going to talk about. I wanted to see how it would do against it, just because it can mill quick when he gets things down. It's just a matter of getting them down.
I do see that you have Medical Droid in here as a healing card, but you do not have Force Heal in it. What was his decision with going with only Medical Droid and not like Lone Operative or Force Healing? Why only one healing card?
I think the one healing card is really the only one you need. He's more interested in putting Protective Mentor down, which does take an upgrade spot, and he also has Coordination down, which powers up his shields. This deck is more about shield generation than it is about healing, and both of those are upgrades, Coordination and Protective Mentor, as well as Force Illusion. So if he puts down something like Force Heal on his Yoda, because Force Heal making a blue character only, he's only limiting that to Yoda. So if Yoda goes down first, Snap and the Jedi Partisan have a lot less chance of finishing out the game, whereas Medical Droid can heal damage from any character. While it is only one, it doesn't cost you the resource to heal any additional, so you're not as worried about sucking that money up, and you're saving your money for things like Strength or Weakness, or putting an additional Scout down, or putting Maz's goggles down.
All that I have to say is, looking at this deck and looking at the results of how heal mill decks are doing on the competitive scene, I am not looking forward to playing these decks. I can tell you that.
Yeah, hero mill got a lot of love. I do like mill as a side game. It is a lot more fun to play than pure damage, just because you think about the game in a very different way. It's similar to why I like draft versus constructed. You think about the game in a very different way, and you play a lot differently than you would when you're running straight damage, because you have an extremely different goal. Basically, your opponent's health is 30 HP, and you're just kind of counting it down from there. Whenever they pull from their hand, you can count from there, and whenever you take it off the deck, you can count from there. And it's just those last couple that always get a little difficult with hero mill versus villain mill, I think, because villain mill, I think, is better at pulling from your hand, but hero mill is a lot harder hitting at the top of your deck. And I think a lot of the cards, like especially Strength Your Weakness, also Force Meditation and Strength Your Weakness, were very welcome additions to the suite of hero mill cards.
I do agree. Hero mill and mill in general is definitely evolving and continuing to grow. Hopefully it is that mid-tier 1.5 or worst case scenario 2. To give an insight of why I do not really care for mill is, in my experience in competitive CCGs, is when you play a mill deck or you play against a mill deck, it changes your game and your approach. A while back when I was playing with my brothers in Pokemon, they showed me this deck focused around Durant. A Durant basically let you mill one card for each Durant in play, and you could have up to 4. And with Pokemon, you had 7 cards in your hand, 6 prize cards, and basically puts you on a clock. Mill puts you on a clock. It puts you on a time limit of how many turns you have to win the game. And most decks cannot conform to that limitation. And while it does allow the aggressive player to learn and evolve and approach the game in a mindset that they wouldn't otherwise, and we have saw this in a stream at the Portland Regionals last weekend, but for everybody cannot do that, and it can be very tilting. And I think that is one of the most appealing things about mill decks, is that they take skill to play, they tilt your opponent, and they put a new level of how you approach and play a game that you wouldn't otherwise with your more aggro / combo decks. Unfortunately, I tend to be a little bit more bland and prefer your aggro decks, unless it's Thrawn Unkar. If Thrawn Unkar comes back, I'm playing Thrawn Unkar.
That deck was oppressive.
Yeah, it was. But the point I'm trying to say is mill changes the game. And I can see why people like it, and I can see why people don't like it. If you think that you would be interested in mill and want to try a different approach, I would definitely check out this deck list in the show notes below. Moving on to our next deck, we're going to go to a deck that I am looking at for regionals. And I do not have my exact deck list because I'm still tinkering with it, but it's going to be the very well-known Poe Hondo. What do you think about the Poe Hondo deck?
I was messing around with a villain Hondo, and then I saw this list pop up on Destiny DB, and I absolutely fell in love with it. The way it plays, it's so aggressive. It's got that special chaining, which is just everywhere right now with Poe coming from R2-P2. Hondo, thematically, is probably my favorite, most well-designed character in this set. He really does fit with exactly the character that he is, and that goes a long way. If you've ever listened to my show, I absolutely love the thematic cards. I do praise them a lot for that creative design space, and I think Poe Hondo is a scary deck just because I don't know when I play this. So far, I've only played it against it maybe 3-4 times. I haven't figured out whether or not I should or should not be giving Hondo his money the first round.
And that's why I love this deck, is because it adds that level of strategy to your game that you wouldn't get otherwise. I played this deck in my last tournament that I was at against opponents that didn't know how to play against it. And when you're playing a deck for the first time and you're still learning the matchup, you're going to make those misplays. That's perfectly normal. This is one of those decks that I think is going to be a gatekeeper in the format. It reminds me a lot of Pomaz.
Yeah, if I have any bad memories of how Poe Maz played.
I was a Poe Maz player, and I absolutely loved that deck.
Oh, you should. It's a competitive format. There's nothing wrong with playing a deck that's that good and that competitive. Poe Maz was always one of those decks that I never did a great job overcoming, and I have always had bad memories of seeing it across the table. And I do agree with you. Poe Hondo, it's red-yellow. It does match up very similarly with that. You're using a lot of the same little tricks, defensive position, hit and run, things like that, in order to get your dice out there so fast.
Not only do you have the strategy of the Hondo, like when to pay Hondo, when to take the damage, when to control the die, who to go to after, but you have the strength of one of the strongest cards in the format, in my opinion, is Planetary Uprising, and you have the return of one of the best, perhaps broken cards in the game, Fast Hands. And I think between those two cards, along with Cunning, you have a very, very, very strong deck that, unless you know how to play against it, you're going to have a bad time. And I don't think the deck is this OP deck. I think once people figure out how to play against it and how to disrupt Hondo and how to approach the matchup, that you'll see it go down. But in this early beginning of the Legacies format, it is definitely a contender, and it is definitely a deck you want to learn how to play, because we are going to see Hondo for probably a long time, at least in the Legacies format.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think that this is one of those decks that you should put on your gauntlet, just like Hyperloops has their gauntlet. I'm going to be floored if this one doesn't make it there. This should be one of the top decks you should be worried about, because the amount of damage Hondo puts out with the consistency on those threes is just something you cannot take lightly.
Another thing that I found out about this deck is, yes, Hondo does a lot of damage, but Cunning is one of the MVPs of this deck, because you can Cunning other specials on your opponent, on yourself, on Hondo, on Pulse Blaster, whatever.
It gives you the flexibility to do pretty much whatever you need with that special side.
And with Fast Hands, you're pretty much guaranteeing yourself a special or a disrupt.
Yeah, it's truly a force to be reckoned with, especially when you sit across the table from it and have played it once or twice and know exactly how much. Putting out 6 to 8 damage in turn one with purely character dice is a pretty stunning thing.
Speaking of putting out that much damage, I would like to share a couple of my experiences with this deck. In one of my games, I did 10 damage turn one.
Oh, you are so cruel.
That was a dead Jedi partisan and 3 damage on Yoda. Turn 1.
Yeah, that's a one turn kill if I've ever heard any, if I've ever heard about it. That's just one turn, GG. It's really hard to come back from that.
Well, I can top that because in Swiss game 3, I was playing against your deck of choice and I lost. I had a poor setup. I didn't get upgrades till turn 3 and I lost. I tend to go on tilt very easily and I wanted my win back. So I'm like, okay, let's do a rematch. I want my win back. And I played and I won the game without even activating pull.
That is really hard to believe.
What the setup was Planetary Uprising, Fast Hand, Second Chance, and I think a weapon. And once his Phasma went down, he scooped because he couldn't keep up. And that is the strength of this deck, and especially with Planetary Uprising, because that's how I won game 4, is double Planetary. It's a very strong card.
Yeah, when 2 Planetaries comes out, it puts a ticking clock on the game because you have to start rapidly claiming that battlefield. You have to start taking suboptimal plays in order to prevent yourself from taking that 4 indirect damage every single turn.
Exactly, and that's where knowing how to play this matchup, knowing when to claim, and knowing when to make those sacrifices is important.
What I find to be especially interesting about this deck is that it's running one of the scary battlefields in the game, Emperor's Throne Room, and the funny thing about this deck is normally things with Emperor's Throne Room, like Kylo and all that, they really kind of hinge upon getting that, and they have really strong rollouts to match it. Hondo and Poe have a terrible rollout just because Hondo has basically 3-0 sides on each of his dice. But the funny thing about this deck is you don't even need Emperor's Throne Room to make this one of the scariest decks in the game.
And that is where Hyperspace Jump comes into play. The deck list that we are sharing in the links below doesn't have Hyperspace Jump, but it is one that I have included in my deck because it is such a strong card for 3 resources, which you shouldn't have too much difficulty getting. You get to end the round and switch your battlefield. That is how I won my second game. The second to last turn, I hyperspaced into Throne Room, and that allowed me to turn the tide in my favor to win that game.
How do you feel about Retreat versus Hyperspace Jump? Because Retreat is a lot cheaper, and it only allows your opponent to take 1 action before they end anything. It doesn't give you that battlefield switch ability, but it does cost a lot less. What do you think about his choice of card there?
In my experience, and I have only played the deck 4 times, I am not a fan of Retreat because it gives your opponent that 1 action. And yeah, you can use it in a deck that is combo-y, such as 1 turn kill sister, or maybe Tarkin sister, but they could use that action to claim, and then it turns off your defensive position, it turns off your aggro and your ability to get ahead. And I'm not a fan of it right now, but I have only played 4 games. I might take it out if I'm going to regionals, but if I'm playing in any events before regionals, I might keep it in there to see if I like it. But I always prefer Hyperspace Jump because it ends the turn right there.
I agree. I think a Hyperspace Jump is worth the extra resource cost. It's also worth the flexibility of taking your own battlefield again.
Do you have any experience playing with this deck yourself?
I have not played this deck myself. I have not gotten a chance to play Poe Hondo yet.
Do you want to play it?
Sure. I'd love to play it. It's one of those decks that seeing it work is one thing and then feeling it work is something completely different.
Moving on to our final deck here that we will be covering is a deck that I am finding myself very interested in. If Poe Hondo wasn't a thing, it would actually be the deck that I would be leaning towards. And actually, I think it is a deck that has more longevity than the Poe Hondo deck. It is a deck featuring colors that goes way back to Veers and Jangles, and my perception of it, and I played against it once, is it kind of plays the same way, but there seem to be a lot more layers. And with that introduction, can you please share with us your final deck?
Yeah, the deck of choice that I brought today to share with all you guys was Boba Fett and Phasma. I know a lot of places haven't had starters legal yet, and that's only because the starter wasn't in ready supply, but now that the release date is out, I think they're going to lift that restriction almost everywhere. So this is a deck you're going to want to watch out for. Boba Fett and Phasma, the way at least I built this, it's kind of heavily based on the way I used to run Cad Bane and Phasma together before they eroded Phasma's points. You got a large suite of 12 upgrades, just constantly flip them out onto each other to roll right over one another and ramp up to the bigger ones. You have a heavy removal suite in order to mess with your opponent. I'm running Electroshock and Tangle. He doesn't like you, as well as Doubt, just to make sure my opponent does not get to do what they want. I have all the action shooting cards in here, Bait, Tactical Mastery, you name it. And I included a couple interesting cards in here. I went with Wrist Rockets over the Relby Mortar Gun just because I wanted to see Boba Fett with Wrist Rockets. Special on that can also do damage to multiple characters, which opens you up to interesting cards like Crackdown. down or superior position, things like that. I love superior position as removal in this deck, by the way, just because play only if you control the battlefield. Let you remove that die. Oh, it's fun. Just remove any die, no restrictions, as long as I get the battlefield. And the speed of this deck is what really makes it.
It is definitely one of my favorite removal cards. I think in Standard, there are so many other removal cards that in order to find space for it, in my opinion, in some decks, it can be a little bit tight. But I am a huge proponent of this, except that in most matchups, it's going to be difficult getting control of the battlefield. With this deck, shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, the similarity of all the dice sides is one thing I worked on. I tried to avoid any indirect damage sides. That's why I went with F11 over E11, just because I wanted to be able to match my symbols more appropriately and resolve as many of them at a time as I can. I initially included stuff like Crackdown in there or Scorched Earth, things like that did a lot of indirect damage. But I found, at least when I was playing this in my experience, I had better luck when I was focusing more than I was doing mass damage to my opponent's health.
What are the contents of this deck? If you could please share with us the contents of this deck.
Absolutely. So starting with my upgrades, I got one copy of Captain Phasma's Blaster, just because you're really only ever going to be putting it on Phasma. Two F11Ds, two Hidden Blasters. I took those out over holdouts just because I like the shield removal ability. LL30, just because I think it's one of the best guns in the game, period. On the Hunt, because there's so many shields around, but it matches perfectly with Boba Fett's damage dice. Wrist Rockets, like I said, just because I like seeing Boba Fett use Wrist Rockets. And the X8 Night Sniper, just because of those high damage sides and the ability to spend one resource to turn this die to any sides. Late game, you're not going to be spending stuff on upgrades as much. You're going to be overriding to get this stuff down, and you're going to be saving your money that you can use to turn that to that 3 for a resource. I went with only one copy of Imperial HQ and one copy of Salvage Stand, whereas my old Cad Bane, when I ran it just because of the pay side directly on his character dice, I ran both Imperial HQ because there's fewer pay sides in this, which I think is a plus because it saves me money to spend on my resources. I got one copy of Armed to the Teeth as my finisher, just in case I can't get one or two more damage before the action phase ends. Spend Armed to the Teeth, discard everything off Boba Fett, and nail 3 damage onto something that they can't block. For my removal suite, like I said, I went with Doubt, Electroshock, Entangle, two copies If He Doesn't Like You, and one copy of Superior Position, just because I'm trying out those battlefield only removal cards right now and seeing how I feel about them, because there are some decks that can claim on me if I'm not careful. And then for my action cheating stuff, I have Bait and Switch, Tactical Mastery, and I rounded it out with Quick Draw to speed up my hand a little bit. Let me pretend I'm playing Cad Bane like I used to, and Logistics as well, just because this deck is money hungry and those early logistics will help you out so, so much in this game.
The first thing I noticed about this deck list is that there is no holdout blaster. What was your decision in not including pretty much a classic?
I really debated hard on including Holdout Blaster. It's just I didn't want to remove anything else. I like the F11D more than it just because it has one more damage side in that special that I can use with Emperor's Throne Room if I'm ever in a pinch. I went with Hidden Blaster over it because I like the shield removal over that. Plus, it doesn't have a pay side. And yeah, it does have a mod side instead of a base damage side, but I have enough range damage sides already between all my character dice that I'm not in any shortage of black sides to resolve. I like it over LL30 because LL30, again, doesn't have a pay side and it has a special that's basically acting like a focus purely for range damage. I couldn't take out On the Hunt to put it in just because it doesn't have the shield removal ability On the Hunt does. It doesn't put out as much damage as Wrist Rockets, and it's not your real closer the way that special can be. And I wouldn't take the Night Sniper over it because the dice is so similar. It costs the same, and yeah, it doesn't have redeploy, but the ability to spend that resource on the X8 is just a little bit better. And I just couldn't figure out what card I would take out instead of it. I'm sure there's someone out there yelling me, this is what I would take out, but I don't know. So far I've been running this and I don't think I need Holdout Blaster anymore. I prefer Hidden Blaster over it to fill that spot. And yeah, it doesn't have redeploy, but I think the shield removal on it counts for just as much. And I have other redeploy weapons like F11D and LL30 that I can override on top of it if I need to save an upgrade.
You might have people criticizing your choices of why you don't include this card over this card, or why did you include this card instead of this card, but that is okay because it is your deck. You can run it however you want. And I think that is one of the most interesting things about CTGs is each deck is representative of the individual player. Usually a more competitive player might copy a deck, but for the most part, every deck is different and it fits their player's personality. Even if that card different is one or two cards at the most, it is representative of that character's personality. And you can see this in the deck list. I like Wrist Rockets. I think it is an interesting conclusion where you said that it was included because you love it. And that is fantastic that you made a choice to include a card representative of your personal preference.
Yeah, I really think that there's plenty of other three-cost guns out there. The Mortar, I've already mentioned it. Usually when it was a staple in my Cad main deck just because of the heavy black sides. But I like the dice on Wrist Rockets just that much more.
And not only that, but it is a target for Emperor's Throne Room.
Yep. It's much more targeted, yeah. Because Relby lets you spend 2 resources and just deal that damage to each of an opponent's characters. Whereas Wrist Rockets, I can do 2 damage, spend 1 resource, and deal 2 damage to that character again, giving me 4 damage on one. Or I can spread it around just like I would with Relby. So it gives me a little bit of flexibility that I wouldn't have with the Mortar Gun. And like I said, I think the most important aspect of it to me is that it's really Boba Fett's signature weapon.
Another card that I would like to talk about from this particular deck list is Entangle. Entangle is a card that I was thinking of putting into my Poe Hondo deck in place of Retreat, but I am trying to build my deck with Kylo in mind, because by the time I go to my regional event, Anakin will be legal, and there will be a lot of Kylo Anakin, and I don't want to be susceptible to that matchup. Having said that, I love Entangle. I love what Entangle brings to the field, because for 2 costs, you spot a yellow character to remove up to 2 dice showing a combined value of 3 or less. So you can remove a 3 cost and a blank or special, or 2 specials, or 2-in-1. It is very powerful. Yeah, there is a limit, but you can select what you remove.
Yeah, I think the Entangle is one of my favorite removal cards in this set, next to Easy Pickings. That's by far and away my favorite. And if I could put hero cards in this deck, I absolutely would put Easy Pickings in here. It's just auto-included, in my opinion. The proliferation is specials, especially. But Entangle is just such a... I love the art on it. I love that it's spotty yellow character, so it's Boba Fett doing the damage. And like you said, I think the tactical value of it is just can't be underestimated. You have the ability to remove whatever you should choose.
I am noticing a theme here. You are a huge fan of Boba Fett, aren't you?
I am. I actually have a picture of Boba Fett hanging over my fireplace at my house.
That is pretty awesome. Do you think you could tweet a picture of that out?
Oh yeah, I'll put that on our Twitter.
Before we wrap up, I would like to talk about Kylo, because Kylo is a card that I don't want to say suppresses, but changes the way that you approach deck building. And with Rivals coming out February 15th, we are going to see a rise in Kylo, because Angry Boys is going to see an increase in play. Anakin, Kylo, when you build your decks for standard, are you keeping this in mind, or are you going for, hey, this is my strategy, I'm not going to worry about Kylo?
I absolutely think about Kylo when I'm building my decks, and I think about it whenever I'm looking at a mono color that I think looks really good. I have to take a step back and be like, well, this is going to be fun, but if I take this into a competitive tournament and I get matched up against Kylo, it's going to be a tough one to overcome. And in this deck especially, there were several cards that I chose over similarly colored cards in order to make sure that I had at least a little more variety. I am still heavily tilted towards yellow, but in particular, I believe it was Electroshock. I considered taking another superior position over it, but I wanted to add in another 1 cost removal, and I wanted to make sure that I had a little bit more red in this deck to spice it up, because this deck is about 1/3 red, and I think that's what you need in order to throw your opponent. Is not a 50-50 split to give him that chance, but to make him think you have 1 or 2 more red cards than you do, and hopefully go for those more than you should.
One of my favorite things about Kylo is his best partners are blue,
so it makes him vulnerable to himself. I've always laughed at that too.
Exactly. Back to Pokemon, my brother shared with me a card called Mewtwo EX, and Mewtwo was a psychic type that had a weakness to psychic type, so the only way you could beat him was to run more copies of Mewtwo. So in order to beat a psychic type, you had to run a psychic type, and that in itself is a very interesting concept in CCGs. I think it adds a level of balance, because yeah, you have a strong deck, but your weakness is yourself. Do you think that concept is good, to have a good deck whose weakness is itself? Or do you think that maybe Kylo should have a better non-blue character to pair with?
I like the idea of having a deck that's own weakness is itself. I think it's a good way of making sure it's never going to, when it gets matched up together, especially at the last couple tables, you wind up with it never at the top. That said, I greatly prefer the rock, paper, scissors method of balance, where one thing is balanced by something different that's balanced by something else different. Obviously, that's a much more difficult feat to task in terms of design, but I think that Kylo having a weakness just to himself, I kind of don't like that, in the sense that it just makes more of the same what you should be bringing. Because, oh, I have a Kylo deck. I hope I don't get matched up against Kylo. Everyone else is probably going to be bringing Kylo, though.
I think that with such a powerful ability and an ability that influences the way that you build decks, it makes sense. But as a player, I would love it if they had a bit more variety because, yeah, Kylo's ability is strong and it can be oppressive at times.
It's 2 automatic damage every time you activate. I mean, we've seen how strong Qui-Gon Kanan is when Qui-Gon is able to just shield up and just do 3 damage every time he activates with 2 Shadows and Fearless. It gets to be really scary that 2 damage every time they activate is something that just cannot be underestimated. And it's not as reliable in Kylo because you are guessing on the color of a card. But the fact that it basically becomes as automatic with Kylo Ren as it does in something like Qui-Gon Jinn when you're facing a mono deck, to me, it kind of speaks that I feel Kylo, it can be a little oppressive at times, especially to newer players who aren't ready for it. Just the idea that, oh, every time he activates, I take 2 damage and I have a 10 health character. That means if he does no other damage, I'm gone in 5 turns.
Bringing that factor into the equation, revisiting the idea of him being weak to himself, having such a oppressive ability, do you think that makes more sense that his weakness is himself?
Kylo's only weakness being himself isn't, I think, a sign that Kylo as a character is strong or that his ability is good. I think Kylo's weakness being himself kind of shows that, well, the only way to beat fire is with fire. So I really should be thinking about, why am I not bringing fire to the table? So I think in that terms, I think I understand what you mean. And I think I don't like how strong it is.
I like what Kylo brings to the table. The idea of it, I do think it is a little bit strong. I think it could be tinkered with a little bit more. It's going to be interesting to see where the game goals, because wrapping things up before we wrap into our conclusion of the podcast, this set is the second to last or last, maybe the third to last set that is influenced by Lucas. And we are going to be seeing the effects of Jeremy, the full effects of Jeremy, and Jeremy is bringing to the game his perspective as a player. We already are starting to see it in this set, and a couple of sets from now and next block, we are going to see his ideas and his presentation of this game as a player, and it's going to be really interesting. I know most people are like, why is FN so good? Why is Bala so good? Why are characters that we do not know as well so good? It is because that their legacy, their background, their character traits are so vague and so unfamiliar that you as a creator can creative game mechanic and abilities to put on that character because you're not limited to a certain theme. And I think Jeremy, with being a bottom-up designer, is going to bring a new, interesting developing approach that it's going to be very interesting to see, because my favorite aspect of this game is theme. And I think Lucas nailed that. And with Jeremy taking the opposite approach, it's going to be very interesting.
I agree with you 100%. I can't wait to see where this game goes from here on out. I think one of the things that for me was most telling about the way Jeremy did when he first came in was, I think his influence was even felt in the FAQ about the increases on price things. He's like, okay, I'm not designing around this card for this long. We're dealing with this and this, and I'm changing this and this. If you know anything about FFG games, I've been playing X-Wing for a long time. The way they tend to go is they do not like increasing the points on things. There's several way easier ways to fix cards that they could have done in X-Wing that they chose to errata instead. And there is something to be said for, well, the points on the card are the points on the card. But at some point, you have to realize that some things are fine the way they are. They just might be a little bit too cheap. And I think a lot of the points increases we saw were really, really well reflected in that.
And not only that, but with the infinite format, those changes at the absolute most will only be relevant for 2 years, especially if they decide that the infinite format is going to be like the legacy format in Magic. Like, sure, there might be a ban list, but I'm pretty sure in that format, you're probably going to see the return of one of my favorite decks, Thrawn Unkar.
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
I cannot either, because I kind of want to see them to support it. But I want that format to be the Wild West.
Oh, I agree. I really cannot wait for the changes that Infinite brings and the real, real fun stuff that's going to be broken as soon as we... I mean, the longer a game goes on, the more broken those old cards get, as any card gamer will tell you. It really does make me smile to think about all the new things that Vader's going to get or all the new cool toys that Thrawn is going to get moving forward.
I know that we can keep talking. It's been such a blast talking with you. Thank you, Austin, for coming on and talking Destiny with me.
Oh, thank you so much, Shadow Geek Girl. I had such a good time.
Before we let you go, if people would like to contact you, where can they find you?
You can find us on Twitter at @pure_sabacc, on Facebook at Pure Sabacc Podcast, or at our website, puresabacc.com. Yeah, those are our main sources of contact. We're really active on the Facebook page. If you guys ever have any questions or thoughts, you can always message us or post there. We love talking to you guys. And if you ever have any questions for us, you can always email us at puresabacpodcast@gmail.com.
That concludes this episode of I Rebel. Thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you all next time.
This has been I Rebel, a Star Wars Destiny podcast. I have been your host, Jedi Geek Girl. If you would like to contact me, please send me an email at irebeldestiny@gmail.com. And as always, may the Force be with you. I Rebel is an independent podcast, not associated with Lucasfilm, Disney, Fantasy Flight Games, or any other organization. All copyrights for Star Wars Destiny, and all other properties belong to the proper copyright holders.